Good afternoon and welcome to the Right to Know Advisory Committee meeting for Thursday, November 17th, 2022. My name is Tom Harnett. I represent House District 83 for two more weeks, which includes the town of Farmingdale and the city of Gardner. And I will begin, as we always do, by having committee members introduce themselves. I'll start with those participating remotely, and we'll call on them in the order that I see them on my screen. And the first would be Chief Gahagan.
Michael Gahagan. I represent law enforcement.
Thank you very much for being here today, Chief. Jim Campbell.
Hi, I'm Jim Campbell. I represent a statewide group whose members are interested in access to information.
Thank you, Jim. Julie Finn.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julie Finn, and I represent the Maine Judicial Branch.
Thank you. And the Honorable Justin Chenette.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Justin Chenette, and I represent members of the public.
Thank you, Justin. And Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin. I represent state government interests.
Thank you. And now we'll begin introductions for folks that are live and in person today, beginning with Betsy Fitzgerald.
Good afternoon, Betsy Fitzgerald. I represent the counties.
Thank you. Judy Meyer.
Hi, I'm Judy Meyer. I represent Maine's newspaper publishers.
Thank you. John Bolton.
Good afternoon. I'm John Bolton, and I am the Attorney General's designee.
Thank you. Eric Stout.
Eric Stout. I'm the member with background in information technology.
Thank you. And Vicki Wallach.
Vicki Wallach, Maine School Board, the Maine School Superintendent Association.
Thank you. And Linda Clancy.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Clancy. I represent the Maine Press.
And Cheryl Sanyuk Heinig.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Sanyuk Heinig, and I'm a representative with legal and professional experience in information and personal privacy.
Thank you. And my committee co-chair, Judiciary Committee, not this committee, Senator Carney.
Thank you very much. I'm Ann Carney. I represent Senate District 29, which includes South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, and a little bit of Scarborough.
Thank you, Senator Carney. And again, my name is Tom Harnett, and I chair the Right to Know Advisory Committee. The next item on our agenda is a discussion related to FOIA requests, Freedom of Access Act requests to school boards. We broached this issue two meetings ago and heard from members of the public who expressed concerns, challenges, sometimes frustration in dealing with those requests being satisfied in a matter that they considered to be timely. To have a fuller discussion, we wanted to again invite members of the public who have these concerns to express them to the committee and to respond to any questions that the committee might have, but also to hear from representatives of the entities on the receiving end of these requests, those being individual schools, school boards, school departments, et cetera. Because we're not all in the same room, it's impossible for me to tell who is who and how many people want to testify on this. So I'm first going to ask how many in the room today, how many members of the public who want to talk about the challenges they have faced want to address the committee today? See, one and two. Are there any members of school boards or school entities in the room that would like to address the committee? And I'm not seeing any. I'm now going to turn to the attendee room and ask how many members of the attendee room want to speak as a member of the public regarding the challenges, frustrations, et cetera, that they have, or good experiences that they have regarding FOIA requests to schools. And I am seeing two. That's Alan. Okay, now I'm seeing four. If you could put your hands down, because I need to ask how many people are in the attendee room who wish to speak to this issue from the school's perspective, from the persons on the receiving end of these requests. If you are here in that capacity, could you please raise your hand? And that would be two people, Michelle Poole and Becky Fless. So what I am going to do is I am going to start with the people in the room. I think we had two hands up. And I am, because we do have a large number of people who want to speak, we're going to limit testimony to 4 minutes. Senator Carney will keep time and let you know when you are nearing the end of that time. We usually give a 15-second warning, and then I will ask people to wrap up their testimony, understanding that they there may be questions from the committee that they will address to you. So with that, I would call upon Mike Sobolewski to come forward, and people in the room will testify in the smaller horseshoe. And I would start by congratulating Ms. Sobolewski for your recent election to the Maine State Legislature.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Sobolewski. I'm a representative-elect Mike Sobolewski of the 73rd District, the Western Mountains, and I live in Phillips. My comments are going to be based on root cause of the problem and some recommendations.
Thank you.
Whenever you're ready, sir.
You're set to go when you're comfortable.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, Senator, members of the committee, the right to know is assured by the Maine Freedom of Access Act. And I quote, "Transparency and open decision-making are fundamental principles of the Maine Freedom of Access Act, and they are essential in ensuring continued trust and confidence in our government. For the past 2 months, I've been working to determine why parents are being forced to use FOAA requests and why there's pushback on providing answers. It's a big onion with a lot of layers. In the last meeting here, I talked about the velocity of the hypersexualization of our children. Here's an example. The Maine School Management Association's recommended policy change at Oxford Hills allows any student to identify themselves as any gender they want to on a day-to-day basis while at school, with no medical diagnosis needed. And they will be allowed to use any bathroom or locker room they choose, meaning freshman girls can come off the athletic field, hop into the girls' locker room shower, and senior boys can just walk in and watch, or worse. The school district, parents, and students did not seek out that policy change. It's been fed to them with the caveat that if they don't adopt it, there is a possibility they will be exposed to litigation. I attended the parents' forum on that policy change, and parents were furious. Situations like that are why parents are demanding answers, and they want them fast. Mr. Chairman, I understand you want legislative and policy change recommendations, timeline and monetary recommendations, and so on. I'll leave those to someone else. My thoughts are threefold. First, MSMA, directly or indirectly, should not be allowed to say what information parents or the public should and should not be allowed. And if they cannot create policy that's in the best interest of all students, we need legislation that requires student social policy changes be created at the local school board level without outside influence or the fear of reprisal. Secondly, by coming to this committee, MSMA is wanting the committee to enable them to disenfranchise parents and the public by allowing large fees for information, stalling and making the public work for it, and by trying to limit the information given to the public. That's not the intent of the law. Their own actions have brought this problem on themselves. They've slow-walked parents and the public from knowing what they're doing, and now want this committee to be complicit in it. If these organizations were not working so hard to not answer or partially answer or mislead the public in the first place, they wouldn't have these problems to begin with. MSMA is acting more like a far-left social justice warrior than a business management company by pushing radical policies on our children. How can they possibly infer that parents and the public do not have the right to know every detail about what's going on and what their intent is? Lastly, the law is fine. It's MSMA that needs to change their policy. It's not for this committee, but there needs to be an investigation into the extent of MSMA's influence on statewide social policy decisions. Who's feeding them the policy changes they pass on to the districts? Who's funding them? Where in state law does it allow them the power to influence statewide social policy? Mr. Chairman, go with the legislation recommendations you already have, but create a stringent timeline and harsh monetary penalties for failure to comply. Make the monetary penalties escalate with elapsed time. Hit them deep down in their pocketbook, and I guarantee you, they will stop complaining and comply with the law as it's written. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sobolewski. Do you have personal...
Oh, sure. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Committee questions. That's okay. That's okay. The purpose of today's hearing is to hear about challenges regarding people who have filed FOIA requests and what has happened to those. I don't want this to turn into a diatribe about what MSMA is doing in terms of social engineering or whatever words you used. Our focus is limited. I understand your concern is not. But have you had experiences with filing requests that you feel did not receive the attention and timeliness that they deserve?
I have not personally filed a FOIA request.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I believe the other person in the audience who wished to testify as a member of the public was Sean McBriarty. Hope I got that name spelled right this time.
Yeah, you got it.
Or pronounced right. Welcome back, Sean. Thank and you. Again, I believe the other person in the audience who wished to testify as a member of the public was Sean McBriarty. Hope I got that name spelled right this time.
Yep, you got it.
Or pronounced right. Welcome back, Sean. And again, if you could introduce yourself, your place of residence, and be mindful that Senator Carney will hold up a piece of paper when there's 30 seconds left.
Yep. Sean McBriarty, Hamden, Maine. I'm an educational advocate and reporter, work for the Maine First Project and Maine Source of Truth. Mr. Chair and members of the Right to Know Committee, thank you for your time. The real scope of what's going on with these FOIA requests is a lack of transparency in Maine's K-12 public school system. Requests by concerned parents and taxpayers across the state. It's the same movement here that's happening across the United States. Parents are starting to wake up to what's happening behind the brick walls of these schools. And we supposedly have a Right to Know Act here in Maine, but they don't want to seem to be very transparent. And frankly, the law doesn't have a lot of teeth in it. Over my first two and a half years that I've been submitting FOIA requests in a dozen different school systems, the generality is first they delay, then they enlist their lawyers at taxpayer expense, then they deny, then they look to charge you exorbitant fees, like this $21,000 bill that I asked to be submitted last time I was in, and I would like to be submitted here from RSU 22, they eventually partially comply, and then they complain about doing their job. So if there's actually personal safety at play, as was mentioned earlier by the first speaker, hopefully that information is going to law enforcement and being dealt with for the 0.1% of the cases that's probably happening. But to get FOIA requests could take weeks, if not months. And Drummond Woodson, the legal arm of the school system, is laughing all the way to the bank because most of these superintendents are engaging them at $350 an hour because they can't simply comply with providing transparency. And so the burden of the taxpayers, again, due to the lack of transparency, and it's really because Maine's public K-12 school system is a horror show right now. Only 36% of Maine fourth graders can read at proficiency, and only 34% of Maine eighth graders do math at proficiency. And I have a lot more information on that, but knowing my time is limited, that is one of the reasons, and the previous speaker talking about the culture aspects that's going on. So per pupil, we're spending between $15,000 and $16,000 on average per child, per student. Before we get into the benefits, it's actually about $25,000 that the taxpayers are paying. Taxpayers are paying $2.6 billion to education in Maine, and yet these administrators can't figure out how to do two or three FOIA requests a week. That's the problem. And so to me, it's really a situation where if we're going to push and the Maine School Management Association to spend time, I'll give you an example from a FOA request. I found out that Vicki Wallach has 73 pages of documents related to my last name within the Maine School Management Association. The only reason I found that out is from a FOA request. And so a piece of that, again, redaction and those kind of things, I certainly understand. But what I would like to really ask this committee to do is, for those who have nothing to hide, hide nothing. And people like Dennis Albert, who is a health teacher in Gorham, Maine in eighth grade, I want to just play you really quick a clip.
I'm sorry, does this have anything to do with the freedom of access?
Sure does. Yes, sir. Absolutely does. Yes. Let me play this for you.
From a teaching perspective, we find it hard in talking with other health educators in our district and stuff is like our hands are tied. And as teachers, we really can't say anything. It's definitely made us not be able to send emails out for fear of, you know, those emails being requested, which, I mean, we're in Gorham, we've been fielding full requests probably 2 or 3 weeks, it feels like. So we're in the heat of things right now.
Again, those who have nothing to hide, hide nothing. The fact that this teacher is saying on video that he doesn't want to use his work email anymore for fear of FOA requests is part of the problem. There's no transparency. And so some considerations that I mentioned last time, Mr. Speaker, is I would certainly enjoy the opportunity to become part of this committee as sort of the voice of reason, the man on the street, somebody who actually has experience in the FOA world dealing with this situation. I would request that the committee put some teeth into holding government responsible. There is no reason that a taxpayer should have to spend their personal money on taking a school district to Superior Court for them to adhere to the basically rules of FOA. And then lastly, I believe that FOA penalties, as the previous speaker stated, should be levied against many of these schools who are willfully withholding information. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McBridey. Before opening it up for questions, I appreciate your being here today, but I want to remind anybody who speaks, this is not about an attack on the educational system in the state of Maine as to how people are doing in math scores or reading scores, mm-hmm. et cetera. I understand those are issues of concern to you. What I am trying to learn and what this committee is trying to learn is about the specific challenges and sure. frustrations that you're having with FOA requests yep. directed in schools.
That is the root cause of why parents
and
are waiting.
I don't want, and I probably should have shut down the playing of the tape. Mm-hmm. I don't want this to be turned into personal attacks on individuals.
It's not a personal attack, sir, it's facts. Point of
order? Yes, ma'am, Senator Carney.
I just raised a point of order that the chair was speaking.
Yes, sorry. Thank you. Yep, I apologize.
And I would caution speakers as we move forward to please keep that in mind and not talk about people who are not here and unable to explain what happened in the circumstance that you're describing. So with that, I would open it up to committee questions. Again, if you are attending this hearing virtually, please put your electronic hand up, or if you're Eric, you can do both. And I will begin with Kevin Martin.
Thank you. I think just to get down to the point on this is, this is a FOA committee looking to solve FOA issues. I think what's most helpful here would be to discuss what's being requested or it's allegations being levied against the school districts, and we understand those, but I think what would be helpful here is we understood what was requested or what was the response, how are these things coming about, so we can understand whether this is a problem or not, or whether this, you know, is this a compliance problem on the part of the schools? Is this a request problem on the part of the requesters in terms of whether it's, you know, narrow or overly broad or not specific enough, and where these issues are coming about so we can actually see what the issue is in the statute.
Thank you, Kevin. And you can, we will hear from some representatives of the school to get the receiving entities who receive the request. But if there are specific questions that you have regarding the other issues that you raised to people that are presenting, feel free to ask them to those individuals.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that for an example?
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Do you have a question on that topic to Mr. McBriarty?
Well, I guess I was, I think he's heading in this direction, and I don't want to steer us too off course, but I think there's allegations that there essentially there's a lack of transparency, or there's not, or the requests are not being responded to. And actually, I'm trying to get to what the root cause of that may be. I think part of that's going to come from the school side. Part of that's going to come from Mr. McBriarty.
So, are you asking Mr. McBriarty if he has an example of a request that?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I do. So this was to RSU 22 on October 7th. I asked questions about anti-racism, racism, Black Lives Matter, BLM, critical race theory, and other things. I asked for that over about a 30-day window. They came back with a quote of $21,037.15, approximately 305 hours to conduct this search, which doesn't equate to $25 an hour, by the way. But anyway, you can see how prevalent this information is, and it is interwoven within the school systems like RSU 22 Hamden, Maine, when it would cost somebody that much money to actually search on some of these terms. And so what I'm trying to do, and first off, I apologize. I wasn't sure. I didn't know I was only going to have 4 minutes. But the overall arching piece of this as to why there are an increase in FOIA requests across the state of Maine is because parents are becoming aware and questioning some of these items that are not being provided transparently to taxpayers, students, and parents. So in this situation, like I said, I would like to have this submitted as public record, because this is the definition of like a clown show, in my opinion, when you're trying to do a FOIA request. And, you know, again, from my perspective, you know, $21,000 for that request is insane. But
did you challenge that? I'm sorry, Kevin, you had a follow-up. I apologize.
Sure, just a follow-up. So I'm not getting too specific on the request here, but is the nature of the request asking for the entire staff of the school system to search certain terms?
So one of the pieces that I had as a suggestion was, if somebody from an IT perspective might be able to do some analysis on actually how much time it takes these schools to pull keywords out of a email system, regardless of the person asked for, that might help the committee and help parents and taxpayers across the state to really understand how much are you asking these people to do? Because in my very simple mind, I think that some of these, a 12-year-old could pull out of the system in 5 minutes, except for if the case that Ibram X. Kendi is in the system 1,000 times, which would then lead me in another direction as a parent. So there's a balance, I think, between trying to figure out what you're searching for and how long it might take, and what you're really asking these IT folks to do, which again, in my opinion, seems to be over-exaggerated quite a bit right now from the estimates.
Thank you. Did you have anything else, Kevin?
No, I think that gets to the nature of what I was looking for is how the request was phrased and how they should be expected to respond to it. So,
yeah, it was a 30-day, it was a pretty wide net. And a lot of times what will happen is we'll come back with something like this. This is just alarming, but then you try to narrow your scope down to potentially get within those 2 hours. So for example, I could have said, hey, just Ibram X. Kendi for the last 30 days, and then ask an IT person within that school to scrub all of the email to find out how many points would come back. But right now, we really don't have a good estimate. And I'm assuming Brenda might know this at a higher level, Brenda Kilty, that we don't know how much time this is really taking people. From a parental perspective, I know I can go on my own email and search keywords very quickly. Maybe it's different when you have 100 employees, but it shouldn't be that dramatically different, in my opinion.
Thank you. Are there additional questions from committee members? Eric Stout.
Yeah, so I was going to ask to drill in, Sean, into that same example that you gave that you just talked about, because in my role with state agencies, I don't work with the school system or local governments, but part of the value that I think I try to bring is to take these initial requests and give some metrics on how many emails there are. Say that you're searching the entire Department of Education, 300 people. No. So I think in my experience that the time estimates are not just how long it would take to find it. Because when we do for the Maine.gov email addresses, we can punch in an entire agency or individual selected individuals. And in 5 minutes or less, we know how many emails there are. So in one recent example, there were 26,791 emails. So what I did then is I say, okay, let's try to break it down. If we did these terms in combination with those terms, or specific phrases instead of just terms like race, you know, specific or specific people, like the key people instead of everybody in the agency, then we can give some metrics and say, okay, based on this breakdown, then here's your options.
Sure.
You know, we can trawl the ocean, or we could fish in a trout stream to get just specific. And in a recent case I was thinking of along those lines, it was initially going to be, you know, thousands of emails, but we got it down when we had to go through three or four iterations. And then we finally, the agency was behind the scenes. I wasn't directly involved with the person, but he was able to say, okay, for this set of terms, it's going to be free because it's only 79 emails and it would be under 2 hours. And this would be 100 some emails and it crossed the threshold. He was willing to pay like $135 or something instead of the initial estimate that was many hundreds of dollars. So it sounds like in this case, there was an initial, you know, non-starter estimate and cost, but it doesn't sound like there was that given, you know, back and forth to try to get you what you need in a way that you can afford or free.
Sure.
And less burdensome for the agency. In my work, that's what I do with state agencies to try to get. But it sounds like you haven't had that experience to that scenario.
In that may I?
Is that right? I'm asking a question.
May I respond? So I wrote down two things. One, in this scenario for RSU 22, it was just a laugh track. Like this was kind of insane. And I got some information in a different way. Most of the time, so I'll give an example. I full requested the MSMA for my name, Sean McBriarty, within Vic Wallach's email, and it came back with 73 documents. And then they told me it would be 9 hours to redact the personal information within those documents. I don't know what personal information should be in a work email, but that's here and there. In that case, I then asked for the entire list of MSA emails, and Steve Bailey has not got back to me with the estimate yet, but that was 5 weeks ago. And so there's a lot of back. I think I'm eight emails in on this one. I do a lot of back and forth to try to get to the answer. I can tell you, I have not had any school show me the math on how they get their estimate. Not one. And when we ask for it, it's very sort of nonchalant, like, well, that's what we came up with. What I'd like to see, and maybe you can exert some influence on the school system, is to say, yeah, there was 29,000 emails from 17 people, and it's going to take this amount of time to redact information, but that's not what we get. Generally speaking, we get a bill that's $1,100 or 21,000 or whatever it is. And then we have to go back and forth and sort of chase these ghosts over 6 or 8, 10 different emails to get an answer.
Go ahead, Eric.
So this is giving me an idea, you know, that the FOA law says that the agencies or the public entity has to give a cost estimate,
right,
and the time to fulfill. And you know, I've been doing this for 13 years as far as technical support for FOA. Yep. So from my perspective, now I'm on this committee, but from my perspective, what you're saying just now triggered an idea for me that if the committee thought it was useful, we could say, and a breakdown of the basis for that cost estimate, such as what I'm describing. Now, not everybody has somebody like me that specializes in this, but if they have IT support,
right,
they can do what we call metrics first, either for individuals or for the entire agency, like Maine.gov. We could do everybody in a whole department or selected individuals. And before pulling the actual emails, we'd say, do metrics first. And it would say, how many hits, how many emails you get for this term, this phrase, this term in combination with that term, and apply different filters like the near filter, which is this term or name near so many words of that term, so that really brings down the context, and then give the metrics on that. And that's the situation I described, a recent case where it was many thousands of emails, but when we broke it down like that and went back and forth three or four times, then he was satisfied that he got the core of what he wanted in a way that was partially free and the rest was affordable. But it takes that that kind of expertise. But it, as far as this committee, if the phrase was added, a cost estimate and the basis for calculating that,
right?
Would my question to you is, do you think that that would be helpful if we added and the basis for calculating the cost?
I think that would be a tremendous help to parents and taxpayers out there. One of the questions, well, things I wrote down as you were talking, first off, most of these schools have six-figure IT support people in each of these districts. Okay. So they're making a tremendous amount of money. They should have the experience to be able to do just that. But the other piece is, and again, this is something that I'm still kind of confused on after doing this for 2 years, is you're supposed to reply as an acknowledgement within 5 business days to the requester. And then you're supposed to give a cost estimate, I think, within a reasonable amount of time. That reasonable amount of time is not defined. And so that could be in MSED 51, Jeff Porter's situation in Cumberland, 4 months, the entire summer. Or it could be 3 or 4 days for somebody else. And so I think you need to tighten up the language of some of these situations to say, yeah, if provide a detailed cost estimate or whatever the nomenclature is going to be, to then provide that requester a little bit more of an idea of what you're actually looking for and how much time it might be. I might want to pay $250 if it's the right information. But I can tell you the difference between the municipalities providing FOA requests, which are very professional, I've dealt with many of them, and the schools, which I will define as a clown show, is a big wide gap.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Kevin Martin.
Yeah, just to follow up a little bit on Eric's experience, because me and Eric are on opposite sides of the equation when we're going through the similar process. I'm reaching out to Eric and those records are coming back to me and those metrics are coming back to me. So I can kind of share that perspective a little bit. I'm not sure how many, whether these schools have somebody like Eric's position. I'd expect the IT support to be, you know, more technical support than email searching, but that might not be the case. But when I go to Eric, typically it's larger requests. It's something, you know, as an example, I've had requests for 2 users, you know, searching 2 people's emails for 6 or 7 terms or combinations of terms, and that will result in 2,000 emails. And the 2,000 emails aren't necessarily a problem if we could turn around and send that to somebody, but somebody's got to go through 2,000 emails because what we receive back is 2,000 emails and we have no idea what's inside them other than those search terms. So it's difficult because it's not quite as simple as, you know, a Google search. I think that's the common misunderstanding. It's everybody's got a computer, everybody can Google something and a bunch of results come up perfectly. And when we're searching Outlook, it's not quite that simple. And then I guess 2 comments on the other pieces that are out there. I know prior to the cloud-based system and working with Eric on these searches, a lot of our basis was individual people searching individual emails. And that was done by search term. And I think I've had some discussions with Brenda at points where, you know, 15 minutes of search term per staff member type of thing. And those numbers add up quickly. I don't know if that's how the schools are getting it. The other piece of this is I'm not sure how helpful specifying where an estimate would go is going to be helpful here. I know, at least from my experience doing the estimate process, it's all staff time. We might circulate and get estimates from 30 different staff, but that's going to be combined into a total of staff time. So the only thing a requester might see is this is going to take, you know, 50 hours of staff time. And I'm not sure we can break it down any further than that. Of course, I'm on the state level. You know, it might be different on the municipal level. I'm not sure, but I guess that's how I would see this playing out, is they would also cite to staff time. And I'm not sure that would be particularly helpful in this case. So
Thank you for that perspective. Yep. Are there additional questions for Mr. McBriarty? Vicki?
Yeah, I'd like to respond. And I'll ask you that. Explain.
We can't hear her.
I'm here now. Sorry, I put my mic on. Can you hear me?
Just barely.
Can you just bend it down towards your... Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Perfect. Thank you.
Great. I need to clarify some things. I'm Vicki Wallach. I am a member of this committee, but I am also an employee of the Maine School Management Association, their Communications and Government Relations Director. Our great concern with the Freedom of Access requests our districts have been receiving is that they target gay, lesbian, and transgender students. Which is the antithesis of our mission as public schools and educators. We accept, welcome, and are vested in all our students, and we must protect them from any discrimination. And that includes discrimination based on their gender identity. Because of that stand, I and my organization and the superintendents we represent have been hit with burdensome FOIAs aimed at undermining our support of all kids. This is really unconscionable. In the case of my organization, the request initially asked for anything in my work email, but now has been expanded to anything addressed to MSMA. If these types of targeted FOIA requests are allowed to go forward, and make no mistake, these requests are intended to discourage public support for all students, regardless of their gender identity, it will be despicable misuse of the FOIA law. We have to support all our kids. I believe as a member of the Freedom of Information Committee and representative of public schools, school boards, and superintendents, we need to address this and not allow FOIA to be weaponized. And I underscore the word weaponized against the population of kids. It is our obligation and desire to serve. Personally, I believe these FOIA requests are just another form of hate speech. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wallach.
May I respond to that, Mr. Chairman?
No.
I can't respond?
No.
Okay. She's not accurate in what she's saying.
I made a ruling.
Okay.
She's a member of this committee.
So I just want to be clear, my name.
Stop talking.
My name cannot be requested.
Talking. I'm talking. Are we going to stop talking? We can sit here all day and do this, sir. I guess we cannot stop talking. Ms. Wallach is a member of this committee, appointed because of her expertise on these issues. We will hear from her. It is not an opportunity to question members of this panel. Are there additional questions for Mr. McBriarty from committee members? I am not seeing any. Again, thank you very much for your time. Oh, I meant to get that. There is a process when this committee is formed. There are appointments made by the governor, made by the president of the Senate, and I believe by the Speaker of the House. So if you are interested in serving in that capacity, I think you should reach out to those entities. I don't know the answer to that. And frankly, it doesn't make a difference because that's how the statute is written. It is those positions that make the appointments. When I checked the room originally, there were two people who wanted to speak. Has that changed? Seeing none, I will now turn to the attendee room, and I'm going to switch. We've heard from two persons speaking as members of the public regarding their frustration. I'm going to turn, I believe we had two speakers from educational connections, either with an MSAD or a school district. So I would ask them to please raise their hands. And I believe the names I had were Becky Fless and Michelle Pooler. I'm going to get to everybody else later. But if you are here to speak on behalf of a school, please leave your hand up. If you are not, if you could please put it down now, I would greatly appreciate it. So that would mean we would have four speaking for schools. I will take two and then go back to two people, members of the public. And they will be, all will be subject to the same 4-minute limitation, but available for questions from committee members. And I will start with Michelle Poole. If we could have Michelle moved over as a panelist, followed by Becky Fless, that would be appreciated. Thank you, Michelle. Welcome to the Right to Know Advisory Committee. As soon as you are ready, if you could activate your microphone and video, and please introduce yourself, give your place of residence, and then begin your 4-minute testimony when you are comfortable. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, my name is Michelle Poole. I was not asked to speak, but I did see that this was available. So I am a school board member of RSU 68. And I'm also a parent. So I did have my hand raised up for both. As a school board member, it hasn't been quite a year, and we
Michelle, I'm sorry to interrupt. Where do you reside?
I reside in Charleston, Maine.
Thank you.
And so the school system is in Dover Foxcroft. We've not had, as a school board member that I am aware of, we've not had any issues with a freedom of access request. I do know that as the high school is a private school, and so as a parent, when I submitted a freedom of access request, I was denied anything because they don't fall under that. So speaking for a high school part of it, I wouldn't have any information for the RSU. I can only speak for the elementary and the middle school.
Thank you. Are there questions for Michelle Poole from committee members? If attending virtually, raise your electronic hand. Otherwise, if you're in the room, just raise your hand. I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much for your time and testimony today.
Sure.
I would now ask for Becky Fless to be moved over to panelist status. And in the interest of full disclosure, I will point out that Becky Fless is a constituent of mine, lives in the city of Gardner, and has been a member of our school board for quite some time and quite a record of public service. Becky, when you're comfortable, please introduce yourself. I've given away your place of residence, and begin your 4-minute testimony when you're comfortable.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to the committee for allowing me to be a part of this conversation today. I've been on the MSAD 11 school board for 24 years. I've served on the Maine School Boards Association board of directors for 10 years, been the president, and I'm the chair of our local board. We have had approximately over the last, since 2019, 2020, we've had approximately 5 FOIA requests of different sizes and of different natures. The law says that we have to respond within 5 days, which we follow very, very closely. Our superintendent is a stickler for the law, even when it's uncomfortable. We believe in our district, and we believe at Maine School Boards Association, that transparency is the key to public trust. And so any idea or accusation that we're doing something nefarious or trying to hide something does not follow anything that I have ever seen in my 24 years on my local board. When someone asks for an email over 4 months that contains the word CRT or Black Lives Matter or any one of these keywords that are particularly popular right now, we are a 12-member board. And so over that period of time, the first FOIA request that we received for CRT actually was back in May of 2020. And so what it requires is that we turn over, because everything we do is public. every email that a school board member sends or receives is public information from the outset. And I want to make one more clarifying point, and that is that when we do our school board training, which we do every time there's a new board member that comes on, they have a 2-hour to 3-hour training. Number one on the list is we don't do any business through email, period. No business, no texting, no instant messaging, nothing. So when it comes up that you've received perhaps 16 to 20 emails from parents or not parents, constituents, and they have used the word CRT, Black Lives Matter, when you have 12 school board members and your technology director has to go through 12 school board members, maybe 10,000 emails when you divide it out over every board member, it takes time. It absolutely takes time. So when we receive a FOIA request, our superintendent, she takes the request. She responds with, I've received your request, and we will be back in touch within the 5-day window to let you know what comes next. So then she speaks with our technology person. She speaks with our curriculum coordinator. She speaks with our business manager. And together, they develop a time frame that they believe it will take to complete this task. And we then put it out there. Your request will take X number of hours. The first 2 hours are free. Anything after that is $25 an hour. And then there's a 10 cent per page for printed material. So then you send your money in. Say it's $1,000. So you send in your $1,000. If it does not meet that time limit, that time frame, we refund the money. We don't keep the money. That would be dishonest. We had one just recently where it was going to be, the cost estimate was $100. It didn't meet the $100. We reached out to that person and let them know and destroyed the check. So we are doing things as honestly and transparently as is humanly possible. We will not and cannot how close am I, Tom?
You're over time, so if you could wrap up.
Okay. We can't have anybody targeted. So there has been a teacher who left our district who was targeted by name, by face, by picture, by a person who has already spoken. And that person has human rights. So first of all, we cannot ask.
I need you to wrap up in fairness to all of the
agreed. Agreed. Okay. Everything is public. Everything we do is in public. And we are here for every single student, regardless of their gender identity. We don't know that. We're not allowed to ask staff what their gender identity is. It's against the law. So there.
Thank you.
Done.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there questions for Becky Fless from committee members? Eric Stout.
So, Becky, I would ask the same question. I don't know if you've heard the earlier questions I had about a little bit of back and forth to try to, for these very large cost requests, which is basically a non-starter for people, to say, well, here's the initial estimate based on what you literally asked for. Do you have any experience of kind of narrowing the request to try to get to what I call the Goldilocks solution? It's not too big, not too small, but just right. In other words, getting them the core of what they're interested in a way that's affordable or even free. So, or is your experience more that it's just, here's the cost, and if they don't pay for it, then close the case? So I'm wanting to explore that with you, what your experience is about a little bit of back and forth to try to narrow to a win-win to get them what they want that's not overly burdensome or overly expensive.
So my one experience is actually the $100 one. You know, it didn't meet what we thought it would, and so the check gets torn up. But the other thing is, you know, parents and constituents have absolutely full access to anything that their students are doing. If you want to know anything that's in the curriculum, you want to know about the budget, all of that is public information. The place it gets sticky is and illegal is when someone's human rights are going to be violated. When someone gets named, when someone gets called something, then that's where things have to be extracted out of emails. If someone is named, that's what makes things really, really complicated. This should not be an opportunity to harm anyone. We are here to protect our students and to protect our staff. So my experience has been that we give out the information. People are welcome to come back and say, I only want to know every time you use the word orange. We would not say no to that. We would never say no to that.
Yes.
So it sounds like what you just described, that by protecting people's or students or teachers, privacy rights, that may be embedded in these results, in these emails or documents, that is that mainly the driver of the number of hours that it takes? It's not just finding the emails and spitting them out or printing them out, but it's having to review them for confidentiality. Is that the driver of the cost for in the education realm?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's our job to protect every child, and everyone has human rights. We just have those. And to violate those, we're not going to cross over that line. So we're going to make sure we don't.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Kevin Martin.
Eric, some of my questions, I guess. I'm trying to get at the nature of some of these requests and how they're coming in, and are the so-called nuisance requests, are they targeting information that is not public? Is that the problem with them, or is it just the amount of staff that are implicated, or is it just I guess I'm trying to figure out where the line is between what seems to me a reasonable request, which is searching school policies and, search terms that might fall within a superintendent's email, versus personal names of students or other types of private information that might be protected by state law or protected by federal law or protected by hundreds of other things. So I guess I'm trying to figure out, where are these requests causing problems for the schools?
So I can tell you the first one that we had, and I hesitate to call it a nuisance request, but it was our first go around with a FOIA request, and it was in 2020. And it was our AP English list had become public somehow, and it's not private. It's not private. It's a public document, a reading list. So some parents, some constituents, and local radio host gained access to our reading list, which again, is not private. It's public, but you wouldn't know to ask for it necessarily. And there were books on it that some parents found offensive. The board doesn't even go over that list. That's done by the teacher, and it's a very specific set of students in the AP English class. And so that took roughly 2 months of our time. And then after we had spent all of this time with this FOIA request and all these special meetings, we then went through our policies manual, which is online for everyone to see. And we clearly have a policy that says, if I don't want my kid to read Green Eggs and Ham, I need to go to the teacher and say, I don't want my kid to read Green Eggs and Ham. And then I get to say, I'd like you to find something of equal value for my student, for my child. But you can't make decisions for everyone else's kid. You get to, as a parent, have as much of a say in your kid's education as you wish. It's incumbent upon you to make a relationship with the teacher, to make a relationship with the building administrator. Those are the parent jobs. So there's no one saying we don't want parents to know anything or to be in school. We absolutely want you to be there in that way. The school board should be the last stop, not the first stop, because the relationship, we don't have anything to do with what teachers are teaching those employees. The superintendent is our one employee. Everyone else works for the superintendent. So the superintendent is the place. You start up that chain. As a parent, I don't like that book. tell the teacher says, too bad, you go to the building administrator. If that doesn't work, then you go to the superintendent. It's not, the school board does approve curriculum, but we don't get into the minutia of a list of books. And that took a ton of our time to get that figured out. And then we've had several after that that are in varying degrees and are less, have taken less time. We had one that was going to cost $6,700. And the person said, no, thank you. And it was about, that one was about ESSER funds and the monies that we got from the federal government. And that's an enormous amount of very, very detailed work that our business, again, we don't have a person who does, we're not a wealthy district. We're a district that doesn't have staff to simply work on FOIAs. So every time you take our business manager away from all the work she has to do that has to get done to meet the deadlines, there's not another person to take up that work. So some districts I have heard have been able to hire a person to do that FOIA work. We're not that kind of a district. So everybody that works in our district and in many districts has enough staff to get the work done, not even get the work done. We're always crunching for time. So it's really not intended to be any kind of a punishment to anybody. It's really intended to just use people's time respectfully and not waste taxpayer dollars on things that may or may not be necessary when you could solve your issue a different way. And I would encourage solving it in a relational way rather than a bottom-up rather than a top-down approach. Does that answer your question?
I think to some extent, yes, to some extent, no. I think it's, yeah, understanding my experience and why I'm on this committee is, you know, I represent the state and more specifically, I represent, you know, I do respond to these. It's not my only hat, but I respond to these on a day-to-day basis. So I come in with a knowledge of the types of requests that pose difficulties to respond to. A lot of times it comes in the form of questions or it comes in a form where the records aren't easily identified. And I guess I'm just trying to get, since we have this, you know, we've been dealing multiple meetings now where these accusations are coming in towards school districts. And I'm trying to figure out how are these being, you know, getting all of the emotions out of this, which I can see here are very heavy, trying to figure out what's wrong with the requests or what's wrong with the response. So I guess my question to you is essentially like, is there any specifics about the requests themselves that are causing the challenges or are causing the staff time or the business manager's time to be overly consumed? You know, me, you know, when I hear these requests coming in, if they're just asking for CRT from the superintendent and searching their emails, you know, people might disagree with that, but that seems like a reasonable request for a reasonable policy type concern. And that seems like it should be reasonably quick to respond to. And I'd side on the side of the requesters. But depending on what exactly is being requested, if they're throwing 50 questions at you guys and asking you to answer them with records, which I've had requests come at me like that, those very quickly become unreasonable. And I'm trying to figure out what format the requests are coming in from whoever is willing to represent that type of that side of the story, essentially.
Right. So we did receive one for CRT every single time that CRT was used in an email. And that came up with virtually nothing because we're not teaching CRT. It's not anything that's being taught. So that was a fairly quick one. And we followed that one through to the very end. And the cost for that one, I think, was $300, but it was roughly 3,000 pages of documentation to get there. So does that help?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, CRT was probably the most, the simplest one. Because we're not doing it, yeah.
Thank you, Kevin. Are you done with your questioning?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Eric, you had an additional question for Becky Fless?
Yeah, so on that example of the CRT or critical race theory, you said it was $3,000, but
no, 300. $300.
Yeah, $300, 3,000 pages. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you. So even on that one, to Kevin's earlier point, if it had been narrowed to be just the superintendent versus everybody on the school board or everybody in the school system, would it have been less expensive and therefore even free to get basically the same topic satisfied? But it sounds like, and this is my experience with state agencies as well, with hundreds that I've helped with over the years, the state agencies tend to literally take what they ask for, come up with an estimate and say, you want to pay for it or not. But I always try to advise them, if you can get to that Goldilocks solution of trying to narrow it, that they can afford it and it's less labor for the agency. But my question to you is, on that specific example, do you recall, was there an attempt to try to say, well, we could get this to you even cheaper if you just narrow it to the superintendent or to selected individuals versus anybody in the school system or the school board or whatever the scope was?
Yes, and the answer to that was no. They wanted every single school board member's email. That's what they wanted. And there was no discussion of CRT in the emails. It was simply the person had reached out to every single school board member and sent us all the same email. So then you have to give it all to Terry, and Terry has to scour through all of it and make sure she covers all of it. So they were not interested in just the superintendent. They felt like the school board was doing something with CRT. And so we happily just gave over everything.
Thank you, Eric. Are there additional questions for Becky Fless? I am not seeing any. Thank you very much for spending much of your afternoon with us, Becky. We appreciate your time and testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity. And Tom, it's always good to see you.
Nice to see you. I'm going to turn back to the attendee room. We do have one hand up that was under educational institution. So I'm going to now, could you move over John McLaren before I return to members of the general public? I'm not exactly sure what status John McLaren is. Wait for John McLaren to be moved over. If you could activate your camera and video. I mean, your video and microphone. Are you representing a school board, school district, or educational institution?
I am not. I am a concerned parent. I had my hand up before before you said all that. I wanted to keep my hand up, so I was called on as far as a concerned parent.
Okay, and I'm going to call on you in a second. What I'm going to ask are for people in the attendee room who wish to speak about their personal challenges with FOIA requests filed with schools to please keep your hand up, and I will move you over one at a time. And again, you will be all required to state your name, place of residence, and then begin your 4-minute testimony. So Mr. McLaren, why don't you go ahead?
Well, my concern is I have a 6-year-old daughter who was cast at Maine. My daughter was given a book, and it was very alarming. Now, my daughter is a girl. She has no question whatsoever what she is. She knows she's a girl. Her teacher thought it was brought it upon herself to give her an identity book. I didn't find that very, very nice. Like I said, my daughter knows she's a girl. She's never questioned it, not once. I reached out to Sean McBrady. I don't know if I pronounced his last name correctly, and he helped me. These books in our schools should not be here. I understand that everybody needs to fight for the kids and everything, but when a 6-year-old is given an identity book when she's more concerned with playing, that alarms me as a parent. That alarms a lot of parents. These books should not be in our schools. They just shouldn't. We're talking about a majority of fact of 0.1% of these kids. Most of these kids know what they are. So I don't understand why we're having such a confusion about this. I understand you guys have to put forth the rights for the kids and everything and support them, but aren't you discriminating against every other kid by doing so? By almost forcing these books upon these young kids? It's kind of wrong. And a lot of parents are getting mad about this. I've been fighting my school board for months about these. I have great rapport with my school board. My school board's actually turned itself over and it's coming around. We're going through our school to find these books. And I've found a few of them. We're just a small town. This isn't right. This should not be shoved down our kids' throats. They need to be learning math, science, and stuff like that, and proper history, not whether if they're a boy or a girl or a frog. We have kids going through high school with tails, and it's distracting to other kids. They can't learn because other kids are going around licking their hands like they're cats. How is this right? How is any of this right?
Mr. McLaren, have you filed a freedom of access request with any of these issues?
I've been in touch with my school board and in touch with the teachers. I'm going that way first. And then if I have to go that as far as the FOAA, I will.
Okay. And again, I just want to remind everybody who's going to testify, this hearing is not about what books are in schools. It's not about educational policy. It is about freedom of access requests directed at schools, school districts, et cetera. But I appreciate your being here today, and I understand that you know, I recognize that this is a very important issue to you. Are there any questions from committee members for Mr. McLaren? Senator Carney?
Yes, I just wanted people who provide information to committees are asked to identify the town they live in. And I know you mentioned that your daughter lived in Wiscasset. I was wondering if you
live in Wiscasset.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are there additional questions for Mr. McLaren? I am not seeing any. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to be with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much, and have a great day yourself, people.
Thank you. I would now ask for Alan Sarvinus to be moved over, followed by Craig Caffrey.
Hello.
Welcome, Alan Sarvinus. If you could please activate. Does somebody have a? We're getting a lot of feedback. It's not. Does somebody have their computer microphone on? Okay, Mr. Sarvinus, if you could please introduce yourself, give your place of residence. We're getting some feedback from, I guess it's your computer. I don't know.
Is that better?
Yes, you may have had your computer speaker on, but that's much better.
I have a testimony that I'll begin now. Hello, my name is Alan Sarvinus from Topsom. Thank you to the AFA committee for providing this platform for feedback. I'm testifying on behalf of Maine Parents Rights in Education, a 501c3 nonprofit whose ground efforts are to empower parents and guardians as primary stakeholders, so they couple with their child's education. All oversight is considered weaponized by the ones receiving the oversight. First, as stated, the increases in FOA correlate with public issues or trends, which is the new reality with social media. These requests recede to normal levels over time, aligning with past trends within margins. A temporary surge in advocacy, which this basically represents, has always existed. Legislators, regulators, and other stakeholders should not allow temporary surges in advocacy as an excuse to revise, add, and or remove any rules, laws, definitions that will lead to a decrease in transparency. Second, the technology in the private sector that indexes and produces results for documents are extremely advanced. Public records requests should be becoming much more accessible without a state employee or a law firm required as a middle person. Any thought of restricting or increasing a burden regarding the FOA process are not the appropriate lenses. The appropriate lenses are ideas based on prioritizing making public records extremely accessible. Third, the financial burden to request process and procedures or assessment data is only due to it's not already public. So any financial burden is unnecessarily created by a lack of transparency. Classroom content is a hidden piece of the pie for stakeholders, which is creating unnecessary financial burden. If Maine followed a state like Oregon and produced classroom content online every Friday, many requests would not incur, hence reducing the financial burden. Finally, our experience with the FOA process, primarily in MS-8075, has led to great information for parents and guardians. To share a success story, in the past month, a FOA for assessment data led to a board agenda item in way of a presentation by the assistant superintendent. While the community was made aware that their term proficiency does not necessarily correlate with a career and college ready, they were shown the rate of 10th graders on track to pass traditional benchmark tests like the ACT is only 7%. This is the information the community desires, so they're able to make their own decisions as primary stakeholders in the child's education. Once more, we appreciate it all involved for providing this platform and all local employees who are working tirelessly at times more and more due to the actions beyond their control, and in our view, usually from above. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan Sarvinus. Are there questions from committee members for Alan? If so, please raise your hand or your electronic hand if attending virtually. Kevin Martin.
Same questions that have been asked already today, which is, have you filed FOA requests?
Yes, I have three FOA requests actively right now in MS-8075. One, as I sat here and listened, one suggestion would be to provide a price with and without responsive documents included. I find that when we request a FOIA and we get documents back, there's a lot of replication of emails, which obviously it seems like it, you know, bumps up the price instead of just returning what were, you know, our original intent.
Okay. I guess as an anecdote there, I think it goes both ways. Sometimes it takes longer to weed out the emails than it does to remove the duplicates. It can go either way. So I guess were your requests overly, were the cost estimates coming back too high? I'm just looking at what's your experience dealing with the statute.
Dealing with, I'm speaking explicitly for MS-8075 and the superintendents we've gone through. The last one, Superintendent Lucy, was fair. He got back to us in 5 days. The testimony is more geared towards not changing the FOIA process, so it's any more restrictive or costly. Does that answer
your question? I think so. Is there any basis for that, or is that just based on our discussion so far in the committee?
It's based on testimony given to the committee about from the MSMA and others who are making it sound like five requests since 2019 is a burden.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you for your response, Alan. Are there additional questions for Alan Sarvinus? I am not seeing any. So again, thank you very much for your time and for providing testimony to us this afternoon. I would now ask for Craig Caffrey to be moved over, followed by Andrew LaPlaca. Craig Caffrey, as soon as you are ready, if you could please activate your video and microphone, introduce yourself to the committee with your place of residence, and begin your testimony when you're comfortable.
Hi, yes, my name is Craig Caffrey. I'm from Bodenham. My school district is SAT 75. A couple months ago, we had, and yes, I have done several FOIAs, and I'm going to read an email that a parent got from the school, which led us to one FOIA I'm going to discuss. The email
this episode is supported by BetterHelp.
Preference.
Unfortunately,
I'll leave out the name.
Human doesn't come with a user's name.
It goes hi blank. No, I just wrote the message on the voice email. I wanted to touch base with you via email as well.
Craig, I don't want you to lose your time, but something's happening that was making it impossible for us to hear you. So hold on a second while I find out what that technical glitch was, and we have no idea. Okay. Craig, why don't you begin again so you get the full 4 minutes. You introduce yourself. You said you were talking about a freedom of access request filed with MSAD 75.
Yes, sir. Several months ago, we had a fellow parent got an email from the school, and I'm going to read that email. I'm leaving out the names to protect the student and the parent. It goes, "Hi, blank. I just left a message on your voicemail, but I wanted to touch base with you via email as well in case it is easier to communicate this way. Blank has expressed to staff and students here at MAMS, which is the middle school, the request to go by the name blank. We have been honoring that. Blank at his point has asked that we use this preferred name in the yearbook under the picture. I've been asked to contact parents and discuss this. You can reach me back via phone or email if that is easier. If you are okay with this, then we are good to go. ... If you have significant concerns about this request, then our district office will be looking into what next steps are." You can imagine that the parent was pretty upset over this. It came out from left field, nothing. The teachers and nobody else contacted the parents at all. And so we had to do a FOIA to see what was going on. And this is what we found. We found a name change form, and it has a student information, date of birth, previous name, preferred pronouns, preferred gender. And bold print, it goes, "Providing my signature below, I authorize Mount Airy High School to update my name on Infinite Campus in the school's email system. Student signature, date. Parent signature," in parentheses, it goes, "optional." And underneath, again, in bold black print, it goes, "Students, please note that change will be visible to parents and other school personnel through your Infinite Campus account." Basically, what this is stating is telling this student how to keep secrets, and it's not right. Parents are the primary stakeholders of any child's education. By having secrets like this, what else is being hidden? And we should not have to do a FOIA to find this form. It should have been readily accessible online. Instead, we had to do a FOIA on this, and it's not right. And this is not even the tip of the iceberg of what we continue finding of what's being hidden from parents about the children. And so the FOIA is the one tool that we parents can actually use and utilize to protect not only our parental rights, but also protect our children from what's going on in these schools. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Craig Caffrey. Are there questions from committee members for Craig Caffrey? I am not seeing any. Again, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to speak with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We have three remaining persons who wish to testify. I will now turn to, they've already turned it for me, to Andrew LaPlaca. And I hope I'm getting your name right, Andrew.
All right, good afternoon.
And welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself, give us your place of residence, and begin your 4-minute testimony.
Great, thank you. Yes, my name is Andrew LaPlaca. I live in Gorham. I'm a parent, very active as a partner with my children's education, as well as the school committee and the superintendent. So I have submitted 3 FOIA requests. I don't have anything really prepared for today. I was kind of caught off guard with this meeting, but I did feel it was important to get in front of you folks and talk about my experience and what's happened in Gorham. So what I've seen since becoming an active partner with the superintendent and the school committee is we heard someone talking about weaponizing FOIA requests earlier. What's happening now in Gorham is they're weaponizing the parents that are choosing to use this process and submit FOIA requests. They're making that information public, what they're submitting, their names, and they're sharing it. And now parents are being attacked just by asking for information, trying to understand what their kids are learning. It's sad, unfortunately, is what it is. Parents are the ultimate stakeholders in their kids' education. We want to be partners. I've worked very hard to be partners in my kids' education. One of the FOIAs, and I know, Kevin, you'll probably ask what FOIAs I've submitted. One of them was about health education, gender identities, whatever it may be. And I did get that response, and it was great to have that information so I could talk with my son before he's taught about that this year in school. And that's all that all of us parents are looking for, is to have the understanding of what's being taught. If schools would simply provide the full curriculum to the parents, whether it's a quarterly basis, a weekly basis, whatever is easy for them, and allow us to understand what's being taught, we wouldn't even be talking about an increase in FOIA requests, because we would understand what's happening and there wouldn't be concerns. That's really the bulk of what I have to share. Not much more than that. Like I said, I didn't have anything prepared. I just wanted to touch on what I've experienced in Gorham since going through these FOIAs and working with the school committee and the superintendent. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew LaPlaca. A quick question. You mentioned that you filed three FOIA requests. Were they all responded to?
They were.
Okay, thank
you. And actually, if I still have time, I did recall one additional piece, if I still have time, Tom.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I apologize. Like I said, I was not prepared to chat today. So there is one additional FOIA request. It was not something that I submitted, but a friend of mine submitted it, who's also a parent in Gorham. And they requested all communications pertaining to a specific timeline. And it was a very specific request requested all communications. I confirmed with Brenda that all communications include emails, includes text messages, IM, whatever it may be. The school committee representatives that were active at that time and they're presently active were not asked to provide that information at all. All that was received via the FOIA was emails. There was no text messages. There was no IM. There was nothing additional from that. So we're already working with Brenda and taking the next steps to understand why exactly that policy was violated. But this is why parents are so concerned, because we feel like there's secrets being kept from us, and we just want to understand what's being taught. So thank you for allowing me to add that piece, Tom.
Sure. And when you refer to Brenda, you talk about Brenda Kelty at the Office of
That's
the
correct.
Attorney General?
Okay. That's
thank
correct.
You. I'll turn back to questions from committee members, beginning with Ken Martin.
Yeah, since you already answered most of what the FOIAs are about, it sounds like, if I characterize it correct, it's not necessarily FOIA that's the issue. It's the fact that you have to FOIA this information, that it's not already transparent. That's the issue here.
Well, so I'm fine if I have to submit a FOIA request, in my opinion, if that's what I have to do, if that's the process that I have to do that, as long as they're responded to based on the guidelines that you have set, that's perfectly okay. The problem that this is becoming is that the school departments are feeling that FOIAs are harassment or whatever they would like to call it, and then they're going to stop wanting to respond it. So if they don't want to continue to field these FOIA requests, provide the information from the beginning, and then we don't have an issue.
Thank
you. That answers your question, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you for that response. Are there additional questions from committee members for Andrew LaPlaca? Eric Stout?
Yeah, I should just say that phone-to-phone text messages are harder to get at. Not saying they can't be gotten to, but an email, like a search, can be done across everybody in that, domain, in that school district, for example. But text messages aren't retrievable in that way. It'd have to go to the individual person, and they would have to find their text message if they kept it. And if they didn't keep it, it's like the situation with the Secret Service with the Capitol attack. If it got deleted, you really can't get it back. So just to give a little technical background, which you may be aware of, you're nodding, but that would be a different level of effort to try to get to phone text messages that aren't in the school's email system.
Sure.
So just give the audience a little background on that.
Sure. Can I respond? Am I allowed to respond to that, Tom?
Very briefly, it wasn't really a question.
So just my understanding, and I agree with you, Eric, on that point. The problem that I've seen with this FOIA is that the folks that this FOIA was asked about, they were not even asked if they had any text messages or IM or Facebook messages, whatever it may be. So, and I agree with your point that it is harder. So thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Kevin, did you have an additional question?
Yeah, same point. I don't want to speak for your school district, but I know at least on my end, we discourage technologies where we can't retain them as easily. So things like team chat and IMs and text messages, it would not surprise me if there's not as much information because it's harder to retain. So emails, typically with communications on a full response from us, it's almost always 100% email.
Thank you, Kevin. Are there additional questions for Andrew LaPlaca? I am not seeing any. Again, thank you for your time this afternoon in presenting testimony to the committee. We appreciate your effort.
Thank you.
Turning back to the attendee room, seeing if I can say something before they get moved over by Colleen. Christine Duplessis. Probably getting that wrong, and I'm probably going to be corrected. If you could please move over, Christine. And then after that, Brooke Miller.
Hello there.
Hi, Christine. I apologize if I made a mess of your last name there. Your first name was okay. I didn't have a...
Yes, it's Christine Duplessis.
Duplessis, okay. Welcome to the Right to Know Advisory Committee. Please introduce yourself, give us your place of residence, and begin your four-minute testimony when you're comfortable.
Hi there. I am Christine Duplessis, and I am a Leeds resident. I went to school here in the MSAD 52 district, as well as my son. I have placed two FOIA requests. We have a new superintendent, so she's actually going to be getting a third today from me. My very first one was I was asking for information on her bond, and I did receive that in a timely manner. Had no issues with that.
I'm sorry, I could not understand that. Information on what?
On, I wanted a copy of her bond.
Oh, okay.
Her bond. Every public official has to take an oath, and ones with specific jobs have bonds. So if, okay. You know, an insurance bond, basically.
Okay.
Yep.
I didn't mean, go ahead.
Nope. So I got that, no problem. The second one I sent was last September, and I did request all emails, text messages, and such from our entire school board. I was one of those people regarding the masking and just some underhanded things I felt that weren't upfront with our district. So speaking as somebody, as a parent, a concerned parent, we've kind of lost trust in our school districts, the superintendent, unfortunately, just by them not being upfront about certain things. You know, some of this, for instance, today I'm sending over a new FOIA to the new superintendent in our district. And that is regarding all communication that she's had and the assistant superintendent has had with the main Department of Education. Because last week I was at a school board meeting trying to share my testimony. And because they didn't like what I was saying, they shut me down for a second time. So I emailed her and I wanted to know what policy I violated. And I still have not received an answer. That's basically, you know, where I'm at with it. And I just wanted to, I guess, let you guys know from a parent standpoint, where we're at.
Thank you very much, Christine. Are there questions from committee members for Christine? If so, please raise your electronic or hand if you're in the room. And I am not seeing any. So again, I thank you very much for taking the time out of your afternoon to present your testimony to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
And I think we have the last person who's indicated that they want to speak on this issue being moved over. And as soon, and I forgot the name already, Colleen, who is that? We are working our way through cyberspace to, whoops, is that a pen? Okay, is there anybody in the attendee space who wishes to speak to the issue on this agenda item regarding FOA requests to schools, school districts, superintendents, school boards, et cetera? If so, please, you found her? Thank you. I haven't seen anybody moved over. Okay, and her name again? Oh, Brooke Miller, if you could please activate your video and microphone. I am unable to see you on my screen. I don't see her listed as a panelist. Okay, but we'll give that a minute. I don't think there's anybody else who wishes to present testimony on this issue. But again, if there is anybody in the attendee space who wants to be heard on this issue, please raise your electronic hand. And I am not seeing any. And have you had any trouble? I mean, any luck with Brooke? Excuse me? Okay. All right, I'm going to close this portion of the hearing. If Brooke Miller does reappear, I will reopen it so she has the opportunity to present her testimony. And we've been going for a little over 2 hours. I'm going to take a 5-minute recess. If we could all please be back by 3:15 and get up and stretch. And we will move on to the next agenda item unless Brooke returns. Thank you. Okay, we have everyone back in attendance. We're going to go back to our most recent agenda item because we have located the last person who wishes to be heard on this. That is Brooke Miller. And Brooke, you can begin as soon as you're comfortable. Just introduce yourself, your place of residence, and begin your 4-minute testimony.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Brooke Miller, and I'm from Winterport. I'm actually going to speak today not so much on FOAA as it pertains to education specifically, but my personal experience with some of the FOAA within the state agencies as a whole. First one that I'm going to bring up is the concept of reasonable did come up in earlier testimony, and I need to second that. Yes,
Brooke, I'm having a difficult time hearing you. I'm not sure if anybody else is, but if you could be a little louder.
Yep, sure. I want to just touch back on something that somebody brought up about the term reasonable, and I just, so that you can get some perspective on that, I've been waiting currently 4 years with a request that was made to the Maine State Adjutant General's office down in Augusta. It was for actually 2 documents that they were the owners of, and I was deflected off to the National Guard Bureau, which has been used furloughs and such to defer me for 4 years. They're now plus the 4 years that they were supposed to have originally granted the request. And I just want to point out that reasonable, you know, that's not reasonable 4 years. And I know that it's been deflected to a federal agency at this point, but the owners of the document were in-state. So that's an example of in-state agencies deferring out to another agency where they, I think, purposely know that documents will be prolonged and suspended due to furloughs. Another one that I want to bring up that was a personal request made was one to the city of Belfast, a friend of mine, city employee, looking for personnel records and some other documentation, got a bill for $855. 6 hours of that bill was actually for a company called Comdoctor IT Services, billing at $105 an hour for managed service hours. This is outside the scope of the regulation, I believe, of $25 an hour after the first 2 hours. And in addition to that, they were being charged 6 additional hours of communication assistant time at the $25 an hour. So a total of $130 an hour for a request. And the last one I want to point out is, because I do a lot of these, and I'll be one of those serial requesters, but I do them for different agencies because it's in the nature of some of my work. Talking to the police department and the city manager up in Orono, after receiving documents, a partial release of the request, we then get another answer to the request saying, no records that match your request. So, and we had already gotten a partial release. So all we were asking for was actually additional pages. We're being told that that's just not something that they do or maintain. So I guess that is, while I will say that some agencies do a really great job maybe of getting documentation to people and being honest about it, there are a significant number of agencies in the state who don't and who use this system to delay and deflect and outrun people to get documents, which really should be, you know, for transparency purposes. And so, you know, any help with any of these would be great, because the redefining reasonable is key, because it doesn't allow agencies to then run out the clock for 4 years. And also, you know, ignoring that when you say $25 an hour, you're also saying, and that is the final $25 an hour, not an additional $105 an hour for third-party contracted services for IT. Thank you.
Okay, Brooke, thank you very much. Your 4 minutes just ended. I'm curious, when you were working through these requests, some of which you thought, well, you said one took over 4 years. Did you contact the FOA ombudsman in the Office of the Attorney General for assistance?
Yes. Not specifically for that four-year one, unfortunately, because that request was shuttled off from the Maine State Adjutant General's office to the National Guard Bureau for the reasons I'm unsure to this day, because as I said, they were the owners of that document, not the National Guard Bureau. So it should have never been passed off to a federal agency when the state was the one holding the documents. I never contacted Ms. Kielty for that one. I have talked to her about some of the other ones, or my associate has. And in the end, you know, nothing personal, but it seems that there's not an awful lot of authority given to the actual ombudsman in the state to be able to affect any kind of movement from the document holder and the person or the entity that we're requesting our request through.
Thank you, Brooke. Are there questions from committee members for Brooke Miller? I am not seeing any, so thank you very much for taking the time out of your day. And sorry it took us so long to get to you, but there are a lot of people who wanted to speak on this issue.
No, I appreciate you reopening the agenda for me to at least get those few points across.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I see a hand up in the attendee space, and Eric Lane. Could you move Eric Lane over to see if he's is addressing this subject? Eric Lane, if you could activate your mic and video. Are you here to talk about FOA?
I am, yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. If you could introduce yourself, give us your place of residence, and begin your four-minute testimony.
Sure, it's pretty short. My name is Eric Lane. I'm from Standish, but I'm contacting you guys. You're taking advantage of this opportunity on behalf of the Gorham School situation. A specific FOA request that I submitted in the Gorham Middle School, on the walls of the school, they have posters that blatantly state that gender is a social construct. That is very, very controversial opinion. And according to the Maine Department of Education's website, anything on the wall teaching kids anything like this is considered curriculum. So I after a lot of searching, questions, and FOIA requests, I had sent in a FOIA request. So during all my searches, I didn't find anything that showed opposing viewpoints to this gender theory, that gender is a social construct. And the school policy in Gorham is that anytime there's a controversial issue like this, and I think we can all agree that is a very controversial issue, Gorham School's policy states that opposing viewpoints need to be presented. So since this curriculum is on the wall, influencing our kids, stating things as fact, one-sided biased teachings, I used a FOIA request and asked for opposing viewpoints to gender theory, so that the school responded and said that they did not have, I believe that the school is forced to, by law, tell me when they don't have what I'm requesting. But instead, they said gender theory is not the word they used is a focus in the school, in that classroom. And then they sent me everything else they had in the curriculum. And I think that that was a violation, because I think they were, my point was, I was trying to get information to say either you do have opposing viewpoints and you're not violating policy, or that you have to admit that you don't have those opposing viewpoints. And that would be proof that they're violating their policy. But instead, they gave me a roundabout answer saying that's not a focus. Well, whatever they define as being a focus, it is being taught. It is part of the curriculum, according to Maine Department of Education's website. And they sent me something. So I feel like they kind of abused the system by sending me something so that they wouldn't have to flat out admit that they're not providing those opposing viewpoints. So after reaching out to Brenda Kielty with a couple emails, she said the only thing I can do is appeal to Superior Court. And after investigation, that requires an attorney and a lot of money being spent. And it's really frustrating when the school's abusing their own policies and now I'm forced to hire a lawyer to hold them accountable. And I wanted to share that with you guys. And hopefully you take that into consideration as you make new policies or influence with this FOIA system.
Thank you, Eric. And I have a quick question before turning to other committee members. You filed a FOIA request.
Correct.
And am I correct? You were told they did not have anything in response to that request.
They said their response was that gender theory is not a focus in the classroom. And then they sent me the rest of the curriculum in the school. So they sent me something that has nothing to do with what I asked for. And they, instead of saying, no, gender, we don't have anything that, I mean, it's on the wall. It says it blatantly. I've been in the news because of this, arguing that this shouldn't be taught. It is taught, and the school committee just kept it there. So instead of saying, no, there is no other opposing viewpoints, which there isn't, they just said that's not a focus. So they're kind of minimizing the fact that it's being taught and then sending me something that has nothing to do with what I asked for. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying, yes.
Okay.
Are there questions from committee members for Eric Lane? I am not seeing any. So again, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to provide testimony to us this afternoon.
Do I still have any more of my 4 minutes left?
You have 47 seconds left.
Okay, I just want to state boldly on behalf of parents of all faiths that FOIA requests are not hate speech, and undermining parents by indoctrinating our kids with radical values is akin to grooming children, and it is child abuse, period. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir. That closes, I hope and think, finally, this agenda item topic dealing with FOIA requests to school boards, schools, superintendents, et cetera.